Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. Well, I've got the usual spread of articles and messages for this programme. Quite a lot of general news items, but that's not unusual. I wonder if any of you listening had any out-of-the-ordinary experiences yesterday with the longest day of the year, and of course the summer solstice. I haven't personally met anyone who noticed an upliftment in the energies, but we have to believe that the changes that took place probably now will start having an effect. I'll start the program as usual with this week's message from Sheldon Nidal, which reads as follows. We return to speak with you about many things now going on around your globe. As you know by now, our Earth allies, fortified with a detailed plan provided by us, have been swiftly tightening the noose around your last cabal. This strategy is nearly completed. Great prosperity promised you for so long is preparing to manifest. This project slipped out of our grasp far too many times in the past. What makes this time different is the huge amount of planning put in before the event, with the express purpose of preventing any possible further snafus. Thus, the present US regime is nearing its end. A decisive encounter between this dark cabal and our Earth allies is now underway. This prearranged confrontation is intended to set up the conditions for the events which are now to move your world out of its escalating chaos. When this is done, a transitional American government can take power and, along with its new allies around the world, start to rearrange how your world functions. This process of moving your world forward into a new reality is not an easy task. Your leaders are a motley crew. The political realm they inhabit has taught them to be suspicious of all-inclusive schemes for change. Our coup has been to convince most of them of the feasibility of comprehensive change and to gain the support of key adherents from all parts of the planet. These leaders set up covert lines of communication between them, which led to a series of conferences. Here, debt forgiveness became an international concept and an immense transformation of your planet's banking, monetary, and financial systems were forged. These pacts, and all that they entail, are to be part of a series of splendid revelations that are soon to fill television screens across Europe, the Americas, Africa, Asia, and Oceania. These agreements are to put into play not only a great prosperity, but also a new system designed to increase that prosperity. The goal is to take your world beyond the concept of the haves and have-nots into one that promotes true, universal equality. Working carefully with our liaison personnel, a great movement across your planet of sufficient quantities of gold and other precious commodities was undertaken. These secret activities permit the provisions of these agreements to come into being. We are proud of these accomplishments, but more to the point, we know that our plans can thus be fulfilled. Supporting these events is a highly detailed program to transform the US Federal Reserve Bank into a true central bank. This operation allows for a new American currency adjusted to pre-inflation levels to come online and for a new currency agreement to stabilize the relationship between the world's designated major currencies. In short, we are working to effect a well-thought-out means to transfer this abundance to stabilize... I beg your pardon, I missed a line there. I'll reread that last bit. In short, we are working to effect a well-thought-out means to transfer this abundance rapidly, not only to the initial trustees, but also to all and sundry. This process, concurrent with the setting up of multiple transitional or caretaker governments, comprises the first domino. Thereupon, your global economy is to be transformed very much for the better through the introduction of a whole slew of new technologies. These new technologies are virtually pollution-free and able to rectify much of the damage incurred by 200 years of your now planet-wide industrial revolution. Your civilization then begins a rapid journey away from the unconscionable depredations of your global economy toward a society where your personal sovereignty and innate freedom take center stage. This change of focus is fueled by the secret agreements mentioned. This is why the series of worldwide I'm sorry about that. We seem to have had an intruding telephone call on the line, and as a result of that, I'm afraid the contact was lost. So I'll just conclude the closing sentence or two of Sheldon Neidl's message on behalf of the Galactic Confederation. And he was saying that during this interregnum, be focused, talking of the first contact, and above all, be ready to help your community and your world by coming forward with reassurance and guidance for possible solutions to problems. And it says, remember the aphorism, each problem contains the key to its solution. And that was the end of Sheldon Neidl's message. Now, I move on straight away to the general news, which is quite mixed. But inevitably, I think there was 1 week when we didn't have something about 9/11, but this week there's one or two items. Now, the pundit professors, as they call them, who are media professionals and stars, have questioned the 9/11 Commission report. And I'm reading from two different articles here, but they both come from the website called wanttoknow.info. And the first one I'm reading is as follows, saying that many respected and distinguished university professors have expressed significant criticism of the 9/11 Commission report. A number even alleged government complicity in the terrorist acts of 9/11. And it went on to reveal public statements on that vital topic by over 100 university professors with links given on the website for verification and further investigation. Now, it reads that the collective voices of these respective professors, along with 50 senior government officials, give credibility to the claim that the 9/11 Commission report is tragically flawed. And these dedicated individuals from across the political spectrum cannot be simply dismissed as irresponsible believers in some 9/11 conspiracy theory. Their sincere concern, backed by impeccable credentials, demonstrates that criticism of the 9/11 Commission report is not only reasonable and responsible, it is in fact the patriotic duty. Now, within the article, it refers to David Ray Griffin, who is the Professor Emeritus of Philosophy, of Religion and Theology at the Claremont School of Theology. And he is also the author and editor of over 2 dozen books. Now, he first questioned the 9/11 official story in 2003 while exploring a 9/11 timeline filled with the reliable, verifiable facts suggesting a major cover-up. He then switched his focus from theology to 9/11 research, and his seminal book on unresolved inconsistencies in the 9/11 official story. His book, The New Pearl Harbor, has sold over 100,000 copies, and his recent one, called Debunking 9/11 Debunking, gives an in-depth analysis showing that most critics of the 9/11 truth movement are avoiding the deep questions on key, easily verifiable facts. Now, I'll conclude the extract by just making the following comments, which he puts under a heading of essay, and it reads that the 9/11 Commission report tells many lies about particular issues. This point is implied by my critique's subtitle, Omissions and Distortions. Quote, how many lies are contained in the 9/11 Commission report? The answer was, I do not know, but deciding to see how many lies I had discussed in my book, I found that I had identified over 100 of them. Once I made the list, it occurred to me that others might find this summary helpful, hence this list. And then within the article, there is a list of 115 lies. Apparently, you can see the full essay on the website Serendipity, serendipity.li. So there you are. You can go to that site, or whether you report that I'm reading came from called wanttoknow.info. As I've often said, 9/11, far from going away, still comes up bringing with it more revelations about the truth as to what happened. Now, Alex Jones has been very much associated with the 9/11 revelations, and most people who follow them will know that we recently welcomed the Loose Change creators, DNAV and Jason Burmes, and recently they were in a discussion at an exclusive interview which they conducted with an individual with high-level security clearance who was inside the Office of Emergency Management in World Trade Center 7 and has described in detailed explosions inside the building prior to the collapse of any of the buildings at Ground Zero on 9/11. Now, that's a very important fact. And the extract I have here goes on to say that the key to this information is that the individual testifies that it all happened before either tower collapsed. Thus, Building 7 was at that point completely undamaged from any falling debris or resulting fires. It means that explosions were witnessed in tower number 7 up to 8 hours before its collapse around 5:30 p.m. Now, I'll read a little bit about the interview because I think it's very revealing. And it is to be featured, apparently, in the final cut of Loose Change, which is currently under wraps, but the creators have allowed some details to leak purely to protect themselves and the individual involved who has asked to remain anonymous until the film is released. The report reads that we can reveal that the individual concerned was asked to report to Building 7 with a city official after the first attack on the North Tower, but before the second plane hit the South Tower and before their eventual collapse, in order to provide the official with access to different floors of the building. The city official he was escorting was attempting to reach Rudy Giuliano, who had determined was inside Building 7 at that time. According to Avery and Hermes, this official now works for Giuliana Partners. The individual was also asked to provide access to the Office of Emergency Management on the 23rd floor of the building. This was the so-called bunker that was built inside World Tower No. 7 on the orders of Rudy Giuliana. When he got there, he found the office evacuated and after making some calls was told to leave immediately. It was at this point that he witnessed a bomb going off inside the building. And he said, "We subsequently went to the stairwell and were going down the stairs when we reached the 6th floor. The landing that we were standing on gave way. There was an explosion and the landing gave way. I was left there hanging. I had to climb back up and now I had to walk back up to the 8th floor. After getting to the 8th floor, everything was dark." Apparently in the second clip, the individual reports on having heard further explosions and then described what he saw when he got down to the lobby. And he said, "It was totally destroyed. It looked like King Kong had been through it and stepped on it, and it was so destroyed I didn't know where I was. It was so destroyed that they had to take me out through a hole in the wall. A makeshift hole, I believe, the fire department made to get me out. He was then told by the firefighters to get 20 blocks away from the area because explosions were going off all over the World Trade Center complex." That's quite revealing, I think, to say the least. Now, there are some clips of that interview on the website prisonplanet.com. I'll conclude that particular extract from this article by just quoting another couple of short items that I read. They're saying that the item in the clips is vital information because it is in direct conflict with the official claim that no one was inside the building, that is Building 7, who was killed. And yet, Avery and Burmes analysed the clips, and they described how the individual who they got their information from had witnessed dead bodies in the lobby of Seven and was told by the police not to look at them. And apparently the 9/11 Commission report did not even mention Building 7, yet here we have a key witness who told them he saw dead people inside the building after explosions had gutted the lower level. And also what makes this information even more explosive is the fact that this individual was interviewed by the 9/11 Commission as they conducted their so-called investigation. There we are. I think anybody with an open mind knows by now that the Commission were selected on the basis that they supported the official, I was going to say report, but I suppose we should call them the official lies. Now, from a good website, Wrens.com, there is another report from which I wish to read, and it was with reference to the spread. Let me see. No, it's not that. I thought it was to do with the spread of AIDS, but that's another article I've got down here, which is talking about HIV research. Now, this is one from an article written by Sue Arrigo, and it is from the website alternet.org, and it reads that an American already tortured by Cheney's team in the US, and this was posted by Kunzang Wangmo on November 11, 2005. While I'm getting there, as a CIA asset, this is Sue Arrigo speaking, I was asked by Cheney in August 2004 to frame Iran as developing nuclear weapons. Because Cheney was afraid of CIA leaks, he gave me the assignment at a Chinese restaurant in D.C. after hours. It was not the first meeting that I had ever had privately with him, as I acted as a negotiator between him and Tenet. Within the CIA, I had been an outspoken critic of U.S. wars and aggression, its nuclear first strike plans, and its breaking of nuclear arms control treaties. I spent most of my life as an operative risking my life as a remote viewing spy, monitoring and recovering lost WMD. I'm a doctor, and the assignment Cheney gave me was to go to Iran as a physician. Once in Iran, a camera crew would be filming when an Iranian agent would rush in to say that he knew a secret bunker where the Iranian government was developing nuclear weapons. Cheney admitted that the rest of the filming would occur in Hollywood with the mock-up of said lab. Clearly, this was an immoral assignment. There was no way that I was going to have the blood of innocent Iranian women and children on my hands, so I refused. When I did so, Cheney threatened the life of my mother. Since my mother had recently told me she would rather die than have me be emotionally blackmailed in this way, I held to my no. During the course of our about 40-minute talk, one of his Secret Service officers interrupted us twice. The next week, when I was kidnapped in Virginia, raped and tortured for 4 days, I recognized the voice of that officer as one of the rapists. It is an outrage that Cheney is advocating torture. He has already shown by his actions that he will stop at nothing, not even the torture of American-born CIA personnel, in order to get his way. He has a clear conflict of interest in making money off these wars. Are we as Americans going to torture people just so that corrupt officials can line their pockets with oil and war profiteering revenues? That's the end of her article come letter. And she did conclude it by asking people to write to their congresspersons to prevent others being tortured as she would. And she says Cheney and Bush should be impeached for lying to force us into war. We're not winning the war on terrorism. Torture is terrorism, as anyone had been through it knows. I was raped and subjected to 3 mock executions, When will this year's reign of terror end? There we are, a very, very disturbing report there of Sue Alido's experiences. I have another article here. It was reported by Dr. Seidelitz from Los Angeles, and connected with it is a former intelligence analyst, Ray McGovern. I'm not quite sure where he comes in. I think in the big article, perhaps he supplied some pictures or something. So it would appear. I haven't got the full report. It was posted on Tuesday the 19th of June. And it was on the RNN News, and it is referring to a former CIA analyst who expressed themselves about impeachment issues. And it reads, yesterday on a cool Venice, California night, members of the Venice United Methodist Church and audience attended a meeting called Real Intelligence, presented by the U.S. Tour of Duty Organization. The distinguished guests were former intelligence analysts for the CIA, Ray McGovern and Larry Johnson. The moderator for the event was Ian Masters of public radio station KPFK. From an analytical point of view, both McGovern and Johnson expressed themselves regarding the present global state of affairs, from 9/11 to the war in Iraq, defending many in the U.S. intelligence community. They expressed their opinions as to how certain particular individuals in high offices abuse and hoodwink both the intelligentsia, the American people, and the global community as a whole, of an inside agenda to divert and deceive many into fear and thinking that present terrorist situation is far bigger than it really is and has been deliberately misinforming all from the get-go. On the subject of impeachment, for example, the elder McGovern felt in his opinion that the impeachment process needs to be done. Both McGovern and Johnson agreed in unison that our involvement in Iraq has turned into a major mistake that is putting the U.S. Army in unison toward a state of burnout and no end in sight. The subject of 9/11 was also addressed by a number of people in the audience. Though both analysis said their involvement in the CIA was under the foreign umbrella of business. Their analytical opinion of present domestic affairs was very troubling. In their opinions, it has been expressed that a true 9/11 investigation needs to be done, and, well, as allegations of abuse of power, deemed impeachable, also need to be addressed and deployed by the Congress, by those in higher office that have breached and violated their oaths of office. In the end, both McGovern and Johnson seem to agree that the right things should be done at a time where our country teeters on the brink of deception and misrepresentation, calling on all of us to demonstrate our rights, to address Congress, to take immediate action under the laws and mandates of the U.S. Constitution. The people who are interested in continuing the race, shall we say, to get Bush and Cheney impeached for their war crimes, I noticed that there are now town meetings nationwide, which you can read about on the website worldcan'twait.org. Apparently they're taking place over the next few weeks in Chicago, New York City, Philadelphia, LA and San Francisco. So things are moving on and expanding. In the UK, we have our own interesting development, which is on a site called clickdocs.co.uk. And there's a bid by a former Scottish MP, Jim Sillars, that is a legal bid, to prosecute Prime Minister Tony Blair for war crimes in Iraq under Scots law. And in a 10,000-word dossier delivered to Lord Advocate Elish Anglioni, Mr. Sellers submits that Tony Blair should be held to account for conspiring to overthrow Saddam Hussein's regime and to starting the war in Iraq, both contrary to international law. The previous attempt to raise a similar action in England failed because lawyers argued that it was not the place to deal with international law. But Sillis claimed Scottish courts have the power to try Blair for war crimes if they believe an established offence such as murder has been committed in the process. He said he had been told by legal experts that the Prime Minister has a case to answer. Sillis said there can be no prosecution at the International Criminal Court because it doesn't have jurisdiction. There is no chance of a special court being established by the United Nations because Britain and the United States have the veto at the Security Council. There is no chance of a prosecution in England and Wales. But of course, Scots law is an entirely different entity, an entirely different jurisdiction with different rules, procedures and instruments available to it. That's interesting development. I never knew the law was so restricted in other places, but perhaps it's very fortunate this issue can be aired, at least in Scotland. Moving on now to an article here about the matter of Mr. Ed and Mrs. Elaine Brown, which most people must have heard of, I would think, by now, the people who refuse to pay taxes. And I have read here from the website supremelaw.org a letter that was sent by the legal representatives of Ed and Mrs. Elaine Brown. And I'll just read parts of it because from a legal point of view, it's very interesting what they say about taxes. And the letter was reading, this is to inform you formally and officially that my office legally represents the United States XREL in 10th Circuit Appeal. In that case, extensive verified evidence has already been admitted into the court's record, proving conclusively that there is no statute at large creating a specific liability for income taxes imposed by Subtitle A of the Internal Revenue Code. The alleged liability was fabricated by the Internal Revenue Service, but there is no corresponding act of Congress creating that specific liability for any income taxes imposed by the IRC. Accordingly, even if the IRC were a de jure service, bureau, office, or other subdivision of the US Department of the Treasury, which they are not, they would still not have any authority to create a tax liability by means of regulations published in the Federal Register. The letter is a little longer than the extracts I'm going to read out, but there's another couple of sentences or so here that are interesting. It also says that the Jury Selection and Service Act is unconstitutional because it expressly discriminates against state citizens by requiring that all jury candidates be federal citizens. The U.S. Supreme Court has already held such class discrimination in jury selection is unconstitutional. And a conclusion, one of many that is made here, reads that therefore the Browns were never indicted by a lawfully convened federal grand jury and they were never convicted by a lawfully convened federal trial jury. Both panels of federal citizens were not lawfully convened federal juries in the first instance. So, these brave couple, by their stand against the taxes, are forcing the whole issue to be brought into the public. And maybe that's what it's all about. In a separate article that I came across, most of it comes to me via the email, there was another comment on that particular case. And what it was saying is, what is income? Because it's a case that is the U.S., in a case of the U.S. versus Ballard, the general term income is not defined, apparently, in the Internal Revenue Code. That comment came from something that was posted on June the 21st. Unfortunately, I don't know the source. Never mind. Anyway, it reads, here's the crux of the Brown's position. Income is profit from corporate activity. Your labor is your own property, which you exchange for a paycheck. But that exchange is not profit, but an even swap. And apparently, in quoting from another case, Edwards versus Keith, they find that the phraseology of Form 1040 is somewhat obscure, but it matters little what it does mean. The statute and the statute alone determines what is income to be taxed. It taxes only income derived from many different sources. One does not derive income by rendering services and charging for them. IRS cannot enlarge the scope of the statute. But those couple of extracts support the claims that are read out in the earlier article. Now here's a, well, I was going to say a more happy article. It's yes and no in the sense that apparently some months ago there was a current affair aired, sorry, the programme The Current Affair aired a story on Perth-based surgeon Dr. John Holt, who many believe has the cure for cancer. Now, the NHMRC is supposedly conducting a review of Dr. Holt's method of cancer treatment, microwave cancer therapy. And the original date for this review was to be submitted to the Minister for Health the 21st of December 2004, but it was not submitted. So a further date was set, and again, the review was not submitted. And at the writing of this particular article, and it was circulated by email on the 16th of June, it had still not been submitted. So the writer is saying it's strange when considering Dr. Holt's claim that he could train any doctor to apply his therapy in one day. Dr. Holt, who is 80 years of age, has cured thousands of people with many forms of cancer and closed his practice on June 30, 2005 because his method of treatment is considered by our government to be unorthodox. I mean, we're talking here, obviously, of the Australian government. Chemotherapy, a known killer, is the accepted orthodox method in cancer treatment. Dr. Holt's retirement will be a great loss to his patients and to the many thousands who could possibly be cured by his clearly successful method. People who will be told by oncologists that there's nothing more that can be done for them. Indeed, this is your chance to help fellow Australians who finally have a chance to beat cancer. Keep Dr. Holt's work from being buried by our bureaucrats. It reads, have you ever noticed how many appeals there are for cancer research, yet after more than three decades, there is no cure? Ever noticed how every cancer cure ultimately gets swept under the carpet? Cancer is a multi-billion dollar global industry that will not recognize any cure that cannot be manufactured as a patentable drug. It's about money. So it is, isn't it? Well, that was it from that particular extract. I can't say who it is credited to, but that's a very interesting topic, isn't it? And one we can fully believe because we know that anything that cuts across the drug companies or the power companies gets put on the side. Usually they buy it out and that's how they manage it. And I seem to have had a lot of news items today and still got one or two left here. There's one that I came across, and I'm only going to read a short extract out of it from Global Research, June the 14th, and it reads that it's official, the crash of the US economy has begun, by Richard C. Cook. And that is on the website globalresearch.ca. I'm not going to read too much out of it, but Richard Cook said it's official, mark your calendars, the crash of the US economy has begun. It was announced the morning of Wednesday, June the 13th, 2007, by economic writers Stephen Perlstein and Robert Samuelson in the pages of the Washington Post, one of the foremost house organs of the U.S. monetary elite. Perlstein's column was titled, The Takeover Boom About to Go Bust, and concerned the extraordinary amount of debt versus operating profits of companies currently subject to leveraged buyouts. In language remarkably alarmist for the usually ultra-grand page of the Post, Perlstein wrote, It is impossible to predict when the magic moment will be reached and everyone fully realizes that the price is being paid for these companies and the debt taken on to support the acquisitions are unsustainable. When that happens, it won't be pretty. Across the board, stock prices and company valuations will fall. Banks will announce painful write-offs, some hedge funds will close their doors, and private equity funds will report disappointing returns. Some companies will be forced into bankruptcy or restructuring. And further, and finally, falling stock prices will cause companies to reduce their hiring and capital spending, while governments will be forced to raise taxes or reduce services. As revenue from capital gains taxes declines, and the combination of reduced wealth and higher interest rates will finally cause consumers to pull back on their debt-financed consumption. There are a due warning there. The idea that the economy is going to collapse is by no means new, has been predicted for quite some time now. Now, the Leo Winter story, which I'm sure most of my listeners are familiar with by now, still rolls on. And from that excellent site, globalanalysis.net, you can find updated reports as to what is happening. Now, on the 11th of June, he reported that associates inform Ameritrust Group Inc. that the three Citibank accounts are still fully stocked and loaded, and that at least $500 billion have been unpaid from the Wanta settlement funds and paid to Vachovia over the weekend. On the same day, they said that associates inform Ameritrust Group Inc. that the U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, has been traveling to various countries to obtain signatures on documents for and on behalf of President George W. Bush, while President Bush was travelling around bits of Europe following the G8 meeting. Apparently, associates inform Ameritrust Group Inc. that informants are now being threatened with violence by officials of the U.S. federal government using mercenary contractors, I mentioned one called Blackwatch Inc., for making statements to associates of Ameritrust Group. Now, I'm not going to carry on reading too much. These updates are written by Christopher Story, who is the editor and publisher of International Currency Review. So I think you can reckon you've got someone there who knows what they're talking about. But a couple of facts that have come out here that I think are interesting. That Ambassador Wanda has not been paid by the Ameritrust Group corporate securities account with Morgan Stanley as of this date. And as of the later date of this posting, which was the 16th of June. They also, that Ambassador Wanta and Ameritrust Group Inc. have made it crystal clear to all those concerned that they will not participate in any new capital market structure or instruments without prior comprehensive due diligence having been performed to their sole satisfaction on all participants and activities in this market. And finally, this position is the origin of suggestions that we have received to the effect that, quote, the Bushites tried to force Ambassador Wanta into taking derivatives as his payment, and he refused. A better word than force in this context might be bounce. There we are, the Wanta story rolls on, and is it no wonder? Now, there was what I would have to say myself was an excellent speech by Putin, and he was responding to the reports of the developments in the US of their missile space protection system. And he gave, this is Putin, a far-reaching press conference to the Western media prior to leaving for the G8 summit, and ordering Russia's military to full alert. Russian President Putin warned that the United States has brought the world to the brink of disaster, and his warning came in response to questions relating to the present threat the United States is posing to Russia, wherein he stated, quote, we did not initiate the withdrawal from the anti-ballistic missile treaty, But what response we give when we discuss this issue with our American partners, we said that we do not have the resources and desire to establish such a system. And as professionals, we both understand that a missile defense system for one side and no such system for the other creates an illusion of security and increases the possibility of a nuclear conflict. The U.S. defense system will destroy the strategic equilibrium in the world. In order to restore that balance without setting up a missile defense system, we will have to create a system to overcome missile defense, which is what we're doing now. An arms race is unfolding. Was it we who withdrew from the ABM treaty? We must react to what our partners do. We already told them 2 years ago, don't do this, you don't need to do this. What are you doing? You are destroying the system of international security. You must understand that you are forcing us to take retaliatory steps. We warned them. No, they did not listen to us. Then we heard about them developing low-yield nuclear weapons, and they are continuing to develop these weapons. We told them that it would be better to look for other ways to fight terrorism than create low-yield nuclear weapons and lower the threshold for using nuclear weapons and thereby put humankind on the brink of nuclear catastrophe. But they didn't listen to us. They are not looking for compromise. Their entire point of view can be summed up in one sentence. Whoever is not with us is against us. So what should we do? The present predicament has brought us to the brink of disaster. Not being fully understood by the peoples in the United States is the great danger that the nuclear missile system proposed for Europe poses for the peoples of Russia and as articulated by Putin. He said, quote, once the missile defense system is put in place, it will work automatically with the entire nuclear capability of the United States. It will be an integral part of the US nuclear capability. For the first time in history, and I want to emphasize this, there are elements of the US nuclear capability on the European continent. It simply changes the whole configuration of international security. Of course, we have to respond to that. And his report, his speech, rather, in full, was quite a long one. And if it's worth reading, and if you're interested in doing so, you need to go to the website whatdoesitmean.com. I haven't got time to read the whole report anyway, as good as it is. And strangely enough, I'm finding that I've had so many different items of general news that I'm actually getting near to the close of the program. So at least I'll finish off the general news if unable to get to my UFO articles or some of the other messages. Maybe next week I might have to rearrange the program to try and get a little bit more balance into it. Now, most people must have heard of Michael Moore's Sicko, which is a healthcare documentary, which I believe is being released very soon. Short report came out here on June the 19th, and it was saying that America's disastrous healthcare system is heaving the country headfirst into near certain economic collapse. Just about everybody's either financially strained or going broke due to the spiralling healthcare costs, the people, the employers, state governments, and even the federal government. Multinational corporations are fleeing the United States due to healthcare costs, taking jobs and economic productivity with them. Meanwhile, 50% of the personal bankruptcies in the US are due to medical expenses. And then there's a PS on this saying, also of those 50%, 85% were insured. Now, there's another problem in the US. Seems that a lot of the problems are surfacing. Really is time for a change, isn't it? Article about Ron Paul from the excellent website prisonplanet.com. It's saying that Ron Paul wants to introduce legislation to abolish the Federal Reserve. This was from a report on Monday, June the 18th. And on the Friday previous, he introduced H.R. 2755 to abolish the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Reserve Banks, to repeal the Federal Reserve Act and for other purposes. The text of this bill is not yet available online, apparently, but Ron Paul introduced a similar bill back in July of 2003, which never even made it through the committee stage. And finally, my last item, the general news, reports about a lecturer and researcher, David Wilcock. Comes from a website which is new to me, called divinecosmos.com. It's an unusual item for my general news, but I couldn't think where else to put it, because he is sharing his perceptions about 2012 and parallel realities. And he said that the 2012 time frame, which many believe is the time when this age will end and a new one will start, could bring a golden age for humanity with a dimensional shift that leads us into ascended states. And if there is a calamity, such as a pole shift around this time, people will warp into a parallel reality and not be affected by it. This was part of his outline in the article. And he offered details of his conversation with Danny C., a man who, he said, took part in the Montauk project, a series of experiments in which portals were materialized and people traveled through them. Space and time were completely inverted in the experiment, so it appeared as though the subjects were traveling through time rather than space. And Wilcock also shared some of his psychic intuition, such as the United States government will eventually collapse and be replaced by nation state. Civilian outrage over the truth about 9/11 will be one of the things that leads to this. He said currently he is working on a film project, Convergence, which he hopes will be ready for release by the end of 2008. I guess that site is well worth a visit. Now, thank you, my friends, for being with me, but within sort of a matter of a minute, I have to conclude the program to give our panelists time to put a fitting end to it and then get the next program ready for broadcast. So I hope you enjoyed the articles that I have included. And I'm actually sorry that I couldn't get around to reading some of the other UFO articles or other messages. I hope to be with you next week, that you will be with me. God bless you all.
Second chances and no one forgives.
Oh,
people come and people go, they just move on, this much I know.
Oh,
there's nothing you can count on and nothing comes for free.
Oh,
the devil speaks with a child's tongue, and if you believe in those naive dreams, then we'll be complete. I don't know no equations of any. But one thing I know when a woman watches, don't look back, girl, you know you used to be. Drug me till I believe.
We breathe what we like, we cut what we sow. We breathe what we like, we cut what we sow.
And people are the opposite of what they do.
Kumbaya, Lord, we throw our treasures on the floor.
The cops got down.
Hi, this is independent producer, composer Nelson Ortez. Looking to get away from the same old stuff you hear every day? To get a fresh new sound? DBS Radio is where it's at. If it's not mainstream, it's on DBSRadio.com.